If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Okay, let's unpack this. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're cutting through the noise to give you the clearest picture of the major AI shifts happening right now as of October 3rd, 2025. We've got sources covering everything from hot new consumer apps and frankly staggering valuations to, you know, how this affects your job and some pretty serious risk. And we really have to kick off with these two huge kind of opposing headlines that just perfectly capture this moment. First, OpenAI. They just closed a secondary share sale, $6.6 billion, pushing their valuation to, get this, $500 billion.
Half a trillion.
Exactly. Making them the most valuable private company in the world, pushed SpaceX down a notch. Mm-hmm. But then on the complete flip side, you've got Microsoft Research confirming AI can now design novel toxic proteins. They're talking about a potential zero-day biological threat. It's urgent.
Right. And it's that exact tension, massive financial ambition colliding head-on with, frankly, existential safety concerns that's shaping everything we're seeing.
It feels like AI has definitely graduated from, like, cool side projects.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's moved way past the pilot phase.
Yeah.
We're seeing it embed itself into critical infrastructure, global systems, our daily routines. It's not just experiments anymore. These are multi-trillion dollar bets. And the risks are, well, potentially civilization level.
Okay, so let's start where most people are bumping into this tech first, the consumer apps. That's where the initial buzz and maybe the money starts. OpenAI's Sora, the video generator, had a really strong debut.
Yeah, incredibly strong, especially considering it was invite only at launch. It jumped straight to number 3 on the US App Store charts.
Wow.
And the numbers back it up. 164,000 installs in just the first 2 days. It actually tied xAI's Grok for day one installs. And maybe more importantly, it beat the launch numbers for both Claude and Microsoft's Copilot apps on iOS.
So that suggests people are really hungry for AI video, maybe even more than the chatbots.
It certainly looks that way. Yeah. The demand for easy-to-use visual AI tools seems massive, maybe even starting to overshadow text-based AI in the public eye.
Interesting. And that shift, text to video, that's got to be expensive to train, right? Which brings us to xAI. They're doing something pretty unique with Grok training.
They are. They're moving beyond just, you know, scraping the web or using basic crowd work. They're actually hiring video games tutors.
Video game tutors?
Yeah, to train Grok on game mechanics, concepts, strategies. They're paying, well, between $45 and $100 an hour.
That's serious money for training data. Is it just about teaching it to play games?
Not quite. It's deeper than that. The job descriptions mention needing proficiency in game design or computer science.
Hmm.
It's not just about being a good player. It's about understanding the underlying logic, the systems, the conceptual stuff.
Ah, okay. So it's high-level data labeling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Focused on complex simulation, maybe even planning and reasoning within virtual worlds. And the fact it's fully remote with medical benefits. That tells you how badly they need this specific niche expertise. It's more valuable than forcing people back to an office.
Right. Okay. Third player making waves. Perplexity. They seem to be taking aim squarely at Google's search dominance.
Yeah, they just made a big move. Their AI search browser, Comet, it's now free.
Free? Wasn't that locked behind their super expensive plan?
It was, the $200 a month max plan. So making it free is a massive play for user acquisition. They're claiming millions were on the waitlist since it launched back in July.
So they're basically trying to steal Chrome users.
Pretty much. It's a direct shot across Google's bow.
Yeah.
And they're not stopping there. They've launched background assistants. Those are still for the Max subscribers, but also a new thing called Comet Plus.
Comet Plus? What's that?
It's a $5 a month news feed. And here's the strategic part. They're launching it with major media partners. We're talking the LA Times, Washington Post, Condé Nast.
Hmm, interesting. Why the big media partnerships right out of the gate?
Well, two likely reasons. One, it's probably a smart defensive move against future copyright battles, like the ones hitting other AI companies. Get the content providers on board early.
Makes sense. And the second reason.
You have to look at the CEO's previous comments. He's hinted that Comet's tight integration allows for incredibly detailed data tracking. That kind of personalized data. Well, that's the bedrock of Google's advertising empire, isn't it?
Ah, so the free browser isn't really free.
It rarely is. Your data, your behavior, your preferences, that becomes the product. Highly personalized, highly valuable advertising could be the long game here.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's that potential value, that data commodity, that underpins these absolutely wild valuations we mentioned earlier, like OpenAI hitting $500 billion.
Right, that half a trillion number. It just pours fuel on the whole AI bubble debate. And you see the tension playing out publicly.
How so?
Well, you've got OpenAI's own CEO, Sam Altman, and Meta's Mark Zuckerberg kind of pumping the brakes, suggesting maybe the hype is getting ahead of reality.
Okay.
But then you have NVIDIA's CEO, Jensen Huang, completely doubling down. He's out there predicting OpenAI will be the next multi-trillion dollar hyperscale company. NVIDIA has also put, what, $100 billion into this space?
So, huge disagreement at the very top. If Altman himself is urging caution, does that $500 billion feel more like a bet on momentum than actual current performance?
I think that's part of it, but it's also a bet on future infrastructure dominance. The thinking is the companies that lock in the customers and, crucially, the compute power now, they'll own the next era of IT. It's a land grab.
Okay, so is the money actually flowing from startups to these AI tools, or is it still mostly hype?
We actually have some data on that. Andreessen Horowitz teamed up with the fintech company Mercury to analyze real spending patterns from startups on Mercury's platform.
Great. What did they find?
Unsurprisingly, OpenAI is number one in terms of where startups are spending their money. Anthropic is number two. That matches the buzz.
Right. Any surprises?
Yeah, a couple of interesting things. The biggest category of tools startups were spending on was creative tools. 10 companies at the top list, including names like FreePic at number 4, 11 Lands for Audio at number 5, even Canva way down at 17.
Creative tools leading the pack. That's interesting.
It is. And maybe even more significant for the future, they saw 4 vibe coding platforms popping up those help devs match code style quickly, and a real increase in spending on agentic tools.
Agentic tools, those are the ones that can do multi-step tasks on their own, right?
Exactly. Things are moving beyond just generating text or images. The spending shows these agentic tools are starting to be used in actual production workflows inside companies, handling complex tasks. That's a big step towards real automation.
And none of this happens without the raw computing power, the GPUs. You mentioned compute lock-in.
Precisely. And that's creating this boom for companies acting as middlemen. Take SF Compute, for example. They basically connect companies that need massive GPU power with the vendors who own the GPU clusters, securing long-term rental agreements, what they call offtake.
And how are they doing?
Their revenue has apparently grown 13 times since July. Customers are spending millions a month just to secure access to compute through them.
13 times. Wow.
Yeah, it shows the desperation. But it only raises a flag. The CEO, Evan Conrad, put it bluntly. He said something like, $1 trillion is flowing into compute. But if you don't have secure offtake guaranteed buyers for all that expensive hardware long term, then you might be looking at a bubble.
So SF Compute's success is kind of a warning sign, too. Renting is hot because buying is risky or just impossible for many.
It could be. It highlights the chaos and the immense capital needed. People are scrambling for power.
Okay, let's shift gears. How is all this velocity, this money, this tech hitting people's actual jobs and workplaces? Because it feels like things are changing fast.
They are. And the message seems to be becoming, learn to prompt or risk getting left behind.
You mean prompt engineering?
Essentially, yes. Look at Citi. The bank just mandated AI prompt training for all 175,000 employees globally across 80.
Tell them, 175,000 people.
All of them. They apparently already logged something like 6.5 million basic prompts this year, but they want to move beyond basic stuff into really precise, efficient workflows driven by AI.
So knowing how to talk to these AIs effectively is becoming like a basic job requirement.
It's being treated that way, yeah. Think of it like needing to know Microsoft Excel or, for traders, the Bloomberg Terminal. It's becoming a baseline skill. It immediately changes how companies filter resumes, how they onboard new hires.
Right. If you can suddenly draft a pitch deck in minutes instead of days using AI,
then the skills you need shift entirely. It becomes less about the manual creation and more about defining the task clearly for the AI. Prompt literacy becomes key.
But if we start relying on AI for more core processes, what about bias? We know these models are trained on historical data, which isn't always fair.
That's a huge concern, and we're seeing research confirm it. There was a study out of McGill University. They had LLMs generate 4 million pay recommendations based on about 60,000 real freelancer profiles.
And what did the AI recommend?
Well, interestingly, the study found no significant gender bias in the recommendations.
Okay, that's good, I guess.
It is. But it found persistent age premiums, older workers getting higher recommendations, and really significant gaps based on geography. Just having a U.S. location tag could instantly double the recommended pay rate compared to someone with similar skills elsewhere.
Doubled, just based on location.
Yeah. Purely reflecting the historical salary disparities baked into the data the LLM was trained on.
So the AI just learns our existing biases.
Exactly. It reflects the messy human history, as the researchers put it. If we start using these models for things like setting wages or performance reviews without intense scrutiny and correction, we risk just automating and amplifying old inequalities. The bias is really stubborn.
And that brings us to a really stark, almost ironic example from the UK, right?
It does. The Department for Work and Pensions, that's the government agency responsible for helping people find jobs and managing welfare benefits.
Right, the job office, basically.
Yeah. They're paying IBM up to £27 million, that's about $33 million US, to implement machine learning into their welfare systems. They're calling it the Nexus AI program.
Wait, the department trying to help people find jobs is spending millions on AI, the very technology many fear will eliminate jobs.
That's the profound irony, isn't it? The agency supporting job seekers is betting heavily on tools that could accelerate job displacement. And worse, there's the risk that some of the most vulnerable people needing support could end up being assessed or judged by opaque algorithms, potentially riddled with the same kinds of geographic or age biases we saw in the McGill study.
That feels deeply uncomfortable.
It's a major ethical challenge playing out right now.
Okay, let's transition back to the tech itself, the safety, the development side. We started with that Microsoft warning about bio threats. Let's dig into that a bit more.
Right, so Microsoft's research confirming AI can design novel toxic proteins. Mm-hmm. That's not just a theory anymore. It's a demonstrated capability.
Yeah.
And that fact alone, the potential for what they called a zero-day biological threat, something new we have no defense against, that really demands attention.
So what's the proposed solution? How do we stop someone from actually using AI to create something dangerous?
Well, there's a debate happening. One side argues for focusing on the physical choke points, like monitoring and regulating the commercial companies that actually synthesize DNA strands. Since only a few companies dominate that manufacturing process, especially in the U.S., you could potentially catch malicious orders there.
Okay, monitor the labs. What's the other approach?
The other camp says that's too reactive. By the time an order reaches a synthesis company, the dangerous design already exists. They argue we need to build safety controls directly into the AI models themselves, make it so the LLMs inherently refuse to generate or assist with dangerous biological designs.
So build the guardrails into the AI's core.
Essentially, yes. Make biosecurity an intrinsic part of the model's behavior, not just an external checkpoint after the fact. It's a fundamental debate about where governance should live.
Meanwhile, on the development side, things are moving fast to make these tools easier to use.
Absolutely. Google, for instance, is pushing its autonomous coding agent, Jules. They've released a new command line interface, a CLI, and a public API.
What does that mean for developers?
It means they can now trigger coding tasks, monitor the AI's progress, and integrate Jules directly into their existing workflows right from their programming terminal. It makes it much more seamless to use, helping it compete better against tools like OpenAI's Codex or GitHub Copilot.
And it's not just for hardcore coders, right? There was something about Claude and no-code automation.
Yes, this is fascinating. Anthropic's Claude model, specifically Sonnet 4.5, can now apparently generate complete workflow automations for platforms like n8n. Just from a plain English description.
NANN, remind us what that is.
It's a popular open source tool that lets you connect different apps and automate tasks without writing code. Kind of like Zapier, but more developer friendly.
Okay, so how does Claude use it?
You could literally just tell Claude something like, hey, build me an NANN workflow that watches my Gmail for emails with invoices attached, pulls out the invoice amount and due date, and then logs that information into a specific Google Sheet.
And Claude just builds that whole multi-step automation.
Apparently, yes. It generates the entire visual workflow for an ATN, That's a huge leap.
Yep.
It goes from just generating text about a task to actually generating the executable process to do the task.
That lowers the barrier for complex automation significantly.
Dramatically. It puts sophisticated workflow automation within reach for potentially anyone who can clearly describe what they want done across any department. It's abstracting away a lot of technical complexity.
Okay, finally, let's touch on how all this AI acceleration is weaving itself into, well, everything else, even pop culture. The Taylor Swift example was interesting.
Yeah, those tracks, Opalite and Wood, they just blew up almost instantly in fan communities online. And AI systems played a few key roles in that rapid virality.
How so?
Well, first, you have the recommender algorithms on platforms like TikTok or Instagram. They quickly identify clusters of Swift fans and people with similar tastes, then aggressively push short, high-engagement clips, maybe a specific lyric or emotional moment to them, triggering rapid sharing and commenting.
Okay, so the recommendation engines amplify it. What else?
Second, the underlying large language models are crucial for speed. They can auto-generate captions, translations, and localized titles almost instantly. That allows lyric analyses or fan theories to spread globally across language barriers within minutes of a track dropping.
Wait, overcomes the language barrier fast. And the third way?
The explosion of AI video generation tools. Fans can now create really high-quality lyric videos, aesthetic edits, mashups, whatever, incredibly quickly. They just feed the lyrics and audio into a tool, and it auto-syncs everything, generating slick user-generated content at a massive scale, almost effortlessly.
So AI is powering both the discovery and the fan creation loop.
Exactly. But there's a crucial safety counterpoint here, too.
Which is?
With this speed and ease of creation, especially with audio and video, comes the risk of deepfakes and manipulation. Platforms are scrambling to deploy better audio fingerprinting to catch leaks or unauthorized usage, and deepfake detectors to spot voice clone spoofs or mislabeled clips, particularly intimate or fake vocals.
The tools to create and the tools to protect have to race each other.
Precisely. The speed of generation demands an equal speed of verification and protection.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the information space just gets completely flooded with noise and fakes.
Okay. So what does this all mean? We've covered a lot of valuations, apps, jobs, risks. Yeah, pulling it all together, the overwhelming theme from everything we've looked at today, October 3rd, 2025, is just this radical, simultaneous acceleration on all fronts. You've got capability soaring free AI browsers that challenge Google, that $500 billion valuation for OpenAI.
Mm.
But at the exact same time, the systemic risks are deepening just as quickly. Mm. We're seeing algorithmic bias in pay recommendations become clearer, and we have confirmation of AI's potential role in creating genuinely new biological threats.
Right.
The takeaway for you listening seems clear. AI has shifted. It's gone from being this interesting novelty you might play with to becoming an essential, almost mandated skill look at Citi, demanding prompt fluency from everyone. And it's becoming critical infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
seen in that $1 trillion pouring into compute and the scramble for offtake agreements.
And maybe that leaves us with a final provocative thought to chew on.
Mm.
If the world's most valuable private company, OpenAI, and major corporations like Citi are pushing full steam ahead on adoption, chasing efficiency and capability,
yeah,
and at the same time, credible research confirms these tools can engineer novel biothreats, how fast does the governance need to run to keep up? How quickly can we build effective safety controls, maybe directly into the models themselves, to match that incredible financial velocity and rapidly advancing technical power?
Mm.
And perhaps more personally, what responsibility do all of us, the newly prompt literate employees, the citizens engaging with this tech daily, have in navigating that widening gap between power and safety?